Welcome back to Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL and on the new 100.3 FM. Time now to talk some Browns on our Budweiser's From the Sideline segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. We welcome in Hall of Fame sportscaster, Fox 8's very own, John Telich. John, a pleasure as always to speak with you, my friend. How are you today?
It is a fantastic day because I think we actually have the Browns at the stadium playing football against someone other than the Browns. So it's a good day. Good to be on with you, Bull.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you on with us, and you're right. I think everybody's excited to see how the Browns fare against somebody in a different uniform than theirs, and there are a lot of things to get into this week, and it seems like the ongoing battle that seems to have drawn the most amount of attention so far in camp is that right guard battle. It really seems like nobody wants to pull away and win this thing at this point.
Yeah, it kind of does, and even Freddie is a little bit guarded in putting the crown on the head of Eric Kush. Even yesterday he said, yeah, he strung some days together, this is good. And so right now, when you look at, you know, the scenario of how he's looking at the right guard situation, Kush has had three straight practices, Bull, where he's been the right guard. So I would think that you want to know who this guy is, you know, relatively soon, and so that you can continue with the five-man rotation that they have, you know, the starters, and then know that the roles of the other guys will be a little bit more defined, whether it's Austin Corbett as the backup center or the swing guy on the guards, or what, you know, our buddy from one of the Cleveland high schools is about to be able to do as far as being a backup, or if there's even time for one of the other two guys, whether it's Corbett or Kyle, for those guys to win the job. But right now it looks like it's Eric Kush, and it looks like they're going with him, at least to see how things go in the beginning of the preseason games.
Is it a problem, you think, at this point that Corbett hasn't emerged the way they thought he might? Because if you go back to the offseason and you look at the deals that they made, it sure looks as though on paper they were really hoping that Corbett would have ran away with this thing, but that doesn't really strike me as a problem if another guy emerges, right?
Well, if you have a guy that's going to be competent and stalwart at that position and it doesn't happen to be Austin Corbett, well, there's a tiny bit of humble pie in the sense that Corbett hasn't demanded playing time and gone out and gotten that playing time. But you also have to remember this guy was drafted, what, 33rd? I mean, he literally was, you could almost say, a first-round pick, even though it was super high in that second round. And so, gosh, that guy should be playing by now. You know what I mean? He should be locked in, a starter, and leave him alone, let him play that position. And so far, Austin has not taken the, quote, bull by the horn. Sorry about that, buddy, but he hasn't done that yet.
Understood. Certainly enjoy that little play on words there. But we're going to talk about the other side of the ball now. I mean, as fun as it is to talk about that right guard battle and the ongoing battle, I'm sure that will continue throughout the rest of the preseason. Why, how about the emergence of Mack Wilson? Boy, defensively, the Browns have some playmakers, a lot of the names we know, and some we're just getting to know. What's really stood out about Mack Wilson in camp so far?
Well, I know 2 days ago he took a pass and had a pick six with it. He has just made a lot of very strong plays in camp this year so far, and there's, you know, been numerous practices that you can go back, and there's a body of work there already. And so you've got to keep your eye on him because I know you have the veteran linebackers in Schobert, and, of course, when you have a guy like Schobert that you can kind of pencil in there and look as good as he is, you want to make sure that there's guys that kind of fill in the back there in terms of being at that position. And they have two good starting linebackers, and it's just good to know that this Mack Wilson kid is not just turning heads, but is the type of an individual you think that you could pencil him in eventually to get a whole bunch of playing time. And I think you'll see him a lot. I would assume, again, Freddie's been cryptic, but I would assume you'd see quite a bit of Mack Wilson playing tonight.
Yeah, without question, because of the first preseason game, it's of the utmost importance for the rookies to play in this thing. And while we may not know a whole lot about how much we'll see of the starters, John, you'd have to imagine that the rookies, at the very least, should see a decent chunk of time, not only tonight, but also in next week's preseason game.
Yeah, I think you'll see, obviously, Greedy. You'll see Taki Taki. You'll see Mac Wilson. And of course, maybe we'll see, I'm not sure, in terms of how they will work out the kicking chores, because you do have a rookie there in Austin Seibert, and they want to see if he's got a chance to kind of overhaul what he has done so far, which really has not been that much to write home about. He needs to improve what he has been doing on the field in terms of getting those field goals to be successful.
Again, you're dialed into the Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience in Oco. We're joined by Fox 8's very own John Telich talking some Browns. Browns, of course, have their very first preseason game tonight. Well, over the weekend, some of the talk was off the field. Former offensive line coach Bob Wiley made some comments, and Freddie Kitchens at first seemed like he was going to pull back in a response, but then he kind of unloaded and he opened up the floodgates, and seems as though he's adopted this no leaks law as well. You care to elaborate on that?
Yeah, he absolutely. First of all, when he was asked the other day about it, he initially said, "I don't really want to talk about it. That's in the past." But it obviously was bugging him, and so he went, full barrels, a couple of barrels at Bob Wiley. My thought is this: Freddie does not want to have the culture that existed a year ago, and I give him 100% backing, because a year ago it was all about who's getting the credit for what's going on the football field. And I think when he stated that the players get the credit, that's how it should be. I think the coaching staff obviously is there to lead the players, but the players have to make it a priority in their psyche, in their heart, the amount of dedication they have to turn things around. And that's kind of what happened last year after the internal discord was taken care of when Haley and Hugh were sent packing. So, maybe that's something that he could have just said, listen, the past is the past. If you don't wear brown and orange, you don't matter. And let's just focus on going forward. But he couldn't help himself. And so he said what he said. If it were me, and again, I think this is nitpicking, I would have just said something on the lines of, listen, Bob was a very valued coach. We enjoyed him having him here. It wasn't going to work out with him going forward with the Browns. I wish him nothing but the best going forward. And next question.
Fair enough, and I think that works out very well for everybody involved, because then there's certainly no harm done. Freddie comes out of this thing looking very good. Although right now, I think Freddie looks very good on all fronts. This, by all accounts, seems like it's been a very, very physical training camp, and some of that intensity does kind of spill over, respectfully, of course, into some of his press conferences or his sit-downs with the media. You can still tell he's pretty intense at the start of those sessions. This seems like it has been an extraordinarily physical camp.
It's been a very physical camp, as you said, Bull, and also he's tried to keep these guys on point. Twice, 2 days ago, he stopped practice and got into their heads a little bit about making what you're doing on the field right now, making it count. So I give him credit for that. But if the New England Patriots, I was talking with Pierre Woods, a former New England Patriot, Glenville Tar Blooder and Michigan Wolverine, and he was talking about the Belichick days. The year that they were undefeated, he said, he could never have imagined the amount of tackling and hitting that they did in practice all season long. And so I think within the confines of the rules that you have nowadays with the CBA, only so many practices, so many days in pads, this sort of thing, I think the fact that Freddie's taking total advantage of that makes a lot of sense, because you're trying to have that degree of toughness and Cleveland Browns lunch pail football, and I think that's what he's trying to instill with the approach that he's had so far.
And I think it also says something too, John, that you don't hear many guys complaining about this in the public. It wouldn't go over very well if they did, but anytime you hear about physical practices consistently, there are two ways of looking at it. Some guys will just say, this is the nature of the business. You have to adapt or perish. And I think other guys look at it like this is what we need to do in order to survive this. And it seems like a lot of these guys have certainly bought in because, again, you don't see many guys backing out and you don't see many guys making a big stink about it in the public eye.
Well, I think inherently they understand that hard work is the only way that you're going to get better as a team. And hard work means you're putting on pads and you're knocking people around. There's going to be days where he'll back people off. You know, the defensive line, the starting defensive line, did not really practice the last 2 days. That would have been Monday and Tuesday prior to the game tonight because he's, you know, being smart, I think, and cautious about the long run. And he also had the taper how he's approached even like the first exhibition game or so when you take into account the fact that next week they're going to be butting heads with the Colts for a couple of days of practices before they play an exhibition game. So he's thinking long term. And also, Bull, it's very interesting to just see him articulate a couple of days ago about you want guys to be, you know, from now on, they're not going to be perfect until February. He said February so matter-of-factly that, you know, I know people think it's almost preposterous to think that the Cleveland Browns could play in the Super Bowl, but at least he has that mindset, and it's not just, you know, a declaration early in camp and nothing more. He believes that he's got a very good football team, and he wants to instill in their minds that they should think long-term in order to be considered one of the best teams. Long-term means you're playing in January, and your season's not over until the end of the playoffs.
Seems like that's the kind of confidence that he's instilled in everybody, especially his quarterback. Baker Mayfield, who by all accounts, John, seems like he's looked terrific in camp so far. What are some of your major takeaways on Baker Mayfield and what you've seen from him a couple of weeks into camp?
Well, so far, an incredible amount of communication in between plays, running down the field, high-fiving a receiver who made a nice play, talking to another receiver, conferring with both Odell and Jarvis. They seem like a triumvirate, if you will, those guys. Incredibly engaged, excited about even small things. I remember on Monday, he had a phenomenally gorgeous deep ball to Derek Willis. You may have seen it on the news. You may have seen it on social media. It was a fantastic one-handed catch by Willis. And Willis got up, and you may have seen that he punted the football. He was frustrated, but yet he punted the football. Bottom line is this. The official there threw his flag, and you could hear Baker, as he was running towards Willis to congratulate him, trying to berate the official, like, oh, come on now. What are you throwing? This is, you know, this is practice. What are you throwing a flag for? And that's how Baker has been. And also going along the lines of just what he did when he threw the football to Willis, boy, his deep ball is absolutely fantastic. It really is. And he just looks like he is so homed in on the ability to hit these guys in stride, whether it's OBJ, Derek Willis, Jalen Strong, Jarvis Landry. That receiving core is going to be one of the super strengths of this football team, and obviously because they have a quarterback that can hit them both in the intermediate level, the out throws, and then, of course, the deep ball, which is just going to be a lot of fun to watch this fall.
I saw the video you're referring to on Twitter because I follow John Telich on Twitter, at John yep. Telich 8. That's where I saw the video. I thought that was really awesome. And you mentioned Derek Willis. I want to hit on him here for just a second because he's the kind of guy that at a position that is loaded to the gills, as you mentioned, with all kinds of talent, he wasn't necessarily a name that a lot of people were talking about going into camp. That big frame, 6'4", a guy that certainly has stood out so far, getting some reps with the first team. What kinds of things has he done in camp that has really impressed you?
Well, I still think he has to be more consistent because we've seen him make great catches like that diving one-handed ball or sideline routes or in traffic. He's made some very good plays. He's got that size, speed, all the things that you look for, but then occasionally there'll be a drop. So I think he has to be more consistent. And another guy that's getting a lot of attention is Jalen Strong, and he's a great reclamation project because, you know, drafted a few years ago, played a couple of seasons, had an ACL injury, coming back from the ACL, incredibly dedicated, has a history with Adam Henry even before he went to college, has a history now with Odell, with Jarvis. very blessed, as he said in an interview with the media a couple of days ago, to be on the same football field with someone like OBJ or Jarvis Landry, soaking up everything he can from those guys and then making plays. So I think those are two guys you want to look at going forward as they fight for those spots, you know, towards the tail end of the receiving core. You can say OBJ, Jarvis, Higgins, of course, those are the three guys that you can lock in. And then from there, you've got the Callaways, the Strongs, maybe Ismael Hyman in there somewhere, and then, of course, Derek Willie. So, a lot of competition for those spots, which I'm sure only is going to make the whole unit, the receiving core, that much better this year.
That is an ultra-talented unit, no question about that. Well, John, we always appreciate the time, my friend. A pleasure, as always, to catch up with you. Certainly looking forward to the coverage of tonight's preseason game, and we look forward to doing this again next week.
Sounds great, Paul. I'll talk to you next week. You guys have a good week.
Thank you, John. You do the same. Again, that's Fox 8's very own John Telich joining us on our Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenient Sunoco. Matt Douglas and I need to step aside and take a break, but we will come back with more fun and excitement on Bullseye on the Afternoon here on AM 930 WEOL and on the new 100.3 FM.